It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
As you know, the president now has sitting members of this government. You have the Attorney General traveling the world now, meeting with U.S. intelligence partners, trying to find out, in his view, whether they participated in some sort of Obama administration-led effort to undermine President Trump in the last election here. You also know that John Durham, who is a former prosecutor, senior Justice Department official, he's pursuing his own investigation on the origins of that probe. Are you concerned that Barr's or Durham's investigation will find wrongdoing and seek to punish former intelligence officials?
Well, I don't know. I don't think there was any wrongdoing. I think at the time all of us were trying to navigate a very, very difficult, politically fraught, highly charged situation. I know for my part, my main concern was the Russians and the threat posed by the Russians to our very political fabric. And the message I'm getting from all this is apparently what we were supposed to have done was to ignore the Russian interference, ignore the Russian meddling and the threat that it poses to us. And oh, by the way, blown off what the then Commander-in-Chief, the President Obama, told us to do, which was to assemble all the reporting that we could, that we had available to us, and put it in one report that the president could pass on to the Congress and to the next administration, and while we're at it, declassify as much as we possibly could to make it public. And and that's what we did. It's kind of disconcerting now to be investigated for, you know, having done our duty and done what we were told to do by the president.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is honestly the most incredible clip that I've come across in several days. That was James Clapper, former director of national intelligence under President Obama. He's being interviewed not on Fox, not on One America News. He's being interviewed on CNN. So the CNN anchor is actually asking James Clapper, what's going to happen here? There's this discussion that there was a sort of a coup to take down President Trump, and are you concerned about this? And James Clapper's response is, "Well, I don't know exactly. I mean, I'm not sure. We thought, you know, we were operating the best of our ability. We were just following President Obama's orders. We had to obey our president, who told us to make everything public." And then, of course, he throws in the fact that we had to investigate Russia. Well, we know now that the story of Russia interfering and colluding with our elections came out of Ukraine, who was at war with Russia at the time, and that they openly were cooperating with the Democrats, with Hillary Clinton's campaign, these particular people in Ukraine, to blame it on the Russians, to collude with the Democrats while blaming President Trump for colluding with the Russians. That's basically what this is all about. And this investigation now of John Durham and of Attorney General Barr, all of this stuff, as I've said to you before, this is panic time for the left, really. This is panic time. This is do or die, because it's an all-out war. The president now has said that I'm going to give you more information later in more detail. But they're claiming now, the president, that they're not going to comply with these requests from the House until there is a formal inquiry, until Nancy Pelosi has a vote. No cooperation. John Durham, now we're learning, has expanded his investigation. He and William Barr have been traveling to various countries. We know Australia, Spain, Italy, Australia, and a third country, and are exploring all of the connections between, perhaps Hillary Clinton's campaign, the Democrats, colluding to destroy and bring down President Trump. It's really, really, really getting interesting. And so you can see that the House Freedom Caucus is getting exorcised. They're rising to the occasion, as they always do. And we'll get into a lot of that. I hope to interview Mark Meadows in a few days, too, and we'll have more conversation on that. But I just wanted to give you an overview because there are other things I want to tell you about before we get into this. The president made a speech not yesterday, but the day before, when he made his decision on Monday to pull our troops out of Syria and let Turkey handle what was happening. And the implication being that the Kurds, of course, who have been fighting on our side, who've been the ones that have been really beaten down the ISIS on our behalf with our help, but they're the ones doing the fighting, would be overrun because they're hated by the Turks. So the president made sort of an impassioned speech. I heard part of it live, but I didn't play any of it for you. And then I read a report of it this morning, and it reminded me that, I don't have the expertise to declare what should happen in that region of the world. I spent quite a bit of time telling you yesterday how complicated this is, and I'm sure you know that, although you might not know all the complications. It really is an absolute conundrum. And so the president made a speech extemporaneously on, I think it was on Monday. Yes, I'm pretty sure it was on Monday. It was during special report. And this is part of what he said in his own defense of how he made this decision. Let's listen.
We are doing what we have to do, but we've been there for many years, long, many, many, many years beyond what we were supposed to be. Not fighting, just there. And it's time to come back home. But I can understand the other side of it. But if you go by the other side, that means we should never, ever come home. We should never, ever come home. And, you know, I have to sign letters often to parents of young soldiers that were killed. And it's the hardest thing I have to do in this job. I hate it. Afghanistan. I signed one the other day. Iraq. Syria. They get blown up by mines. They get taken out by a sniper. And I have to write letters to people. And we make each letter different. Each person is different. And we make them personal, but no matter what you do, it's devastating. The parents will never be the same. The families will never be the same. People are killed. Many people are still being killed. It's going to go on that way for perhaps a long time. And we're willing to do what we have to do, but there has to be an end game.
That was part of what the president said. I just thought it was very moving. I actually felt, you know, even the men standing behind him who were there for another purpose, I don't recall what the occasion was, you could see on their faces that they understood what he was saying. We certainly do understand. Now, here's the counter story. Overnight, Turkish troops have crossed into Syria. Iran has launched a military drill near the Turkish border. Erdogan, a Turkish communications director, Fahrettin Altun, called on the international community to rally behind Ankara, calling the Kurds armed thugs from which the local population needed to be liberated. We know that the Kurds are the object of the Turkish ire because they are fierce fighters and they have been our allies. So that's the truth, both of those things. That's the conundrum. How in the world do you make a decision like that? If ever there was a Sophie's Choice, this is it. You may remember that famous movie. Meryl Streep played the lead, but it was based on a famous story coming out of World War II where a mother had to choose between the lives of her two children, one to live or one to die. And so, you know, President Trump has chosen to put America first in this very difficult situation. And I'm just glad I didn't have to make that choice. Now, people are saying today that perhaps he's going to modify what he's saying. He's coming back saying that the Turks will be punished economically. He did hint on that on Monday, if they should come after the Kurds. But I just am not sure how that's going to play out. So it's a sad conundrum. The one thing you have to say about President Trump is he knows how to man up. He knows how to make the tough decisions. And so that's what he's done. I want to talk to you about some practical things. We had Jenny Beth Martin on with us on Monday of this week. And you will recall we talked that tomorrow is a National Day of Action called by Tea Party Patriots. And you don't have to be part of Tea Party Patriots to be part of this. And what Jenny Beth is encouraging, and I am too, is that tomorrow, because Congress people are in their home offices, this is the day to go to their home offices and make the case against impeachment. In fact, there is a website that you can go where you can, if you need more information, I'm sure you can do this without this, but I'm just telling you, there's a good website. It's TrumpDefenseTeam.com, TrumpDefenseTeam.com, that will help you maybe with addresses to your, you can find the addresses of your congressperson, but if you need that help, TrumpDefenseTeam.com. Also, it just will prepare you kind of on how to lobby. And don't make it a big deal. You're an American citizen. Those of you, if you're not an American citizen, don't go. You're an American citizen. You don't have to be polished and perfect, but you can go and make your case to your congressperson. And I think you should do that. I really do. So often people are asking me, what can they do? And this is something they can certainly do. I also want to remind you that the Virginia election is coming up November 5th. And the Virginia House of Delegates and the Senate is on the brink of losing all power and going the way of California. And that is not an overstatement. It is just not an overstatement. There was a huge sweep in 2016. You remember the first transgender candidate anywhere in the country won in Virginia, beat, our friend Bob, whose last name is escaping me in this moment, but he was a champion on for marriage between one man and one woman for life. And he beat him. That's just one candidate. There was a sweep in the House of Delegates. And you remember shortly after that, Kathy Tran started pushing for abortion for all 9 months. It's appalling, and it's going to get worse. So November 5th is that election. And American Family Association has a voter guide, AFA. You can get it at AFA Action or AFA.net. AFA.net is our voter guide, and that will help you determine, you know, which candidates stand for what things, and help you equip you for how to vote. Now, so many other things I want to tell you. President Trump is supposed to be in Minneapolis tomorrow. I told you that. We talked about it. Antifa is threatening. It's calling for, they're having a rally called America is Canceled. They want to disrupt President's Minneapolis rally. Meanwhile, the mayor of Minneapolis has issued a decree that the police department he's banning officers of the police department from wearing their uniforms at this rally. Now, when Barack Obama came, of course, they were ordered to stand behind President Obama when he spoke. But this mayor hates the president. So Pete Hetsek interviewed the Lieutenant Bob Crowles, a policeman in Minneapolis, and asked him about the order not to wear the uniform. This is what Bob said.
In compliance with policy, we don't want any issues, so we just thought, you know what, we'll turn the place into a sea of red with these shirts we designed, and they're available, and we can't keep them on the shelves. They've been selling out as fast as they come in.
He goes on to talk about how policemen are responding to this and what's happened in the past. Clip two.
They have. Ironically, they were ordered to be behind those presidents, and we got calls to the Federation asking if they could be forced to do it. And command staffers were behind, and they've since advanced in the ranks. And now we're here, and officers want to be there in uniform, and they're not allowed to be. So beyond law enforcement, we've just got a big groundswell of support behind the president and the police. So we're going to have a lot of people wearing these shirts.
Pete then asked Lieutenant Bob Crowles, why is it that the police in Minneapolis support President Trump? And this was his answer.
You compare the administrations, the Obama administration, the 21st century policing, and implicit bias training, then investigations they initiated against officers, all of which were unfounded. It's the exact opposite under the Trump administration. Law enforcement nationwide has enjoyed his support of he and his administration, starting at the Department of Justice. So the list goes on and on. And, you know, local politics here, it's very left. And the mayor reacted very hostile to the president's announcement that he was coming. So this is our way to show our support without being in violation of the new policy they created.
You know what? There's so much to say about this. But let me just say, I think the president, he's putting himself in harm's way. Antifa is declaring that they're going to be there in full force. The police are now told not to wear their uniforms. In spite of what Bob says, that can't be helpful. And the mayor is completely undermining the president. This is going to be tomorrow in Minneapolis, so all eyes will be on Minneapolis. Right back.
So there's this guy named Jordan, and he's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. But then he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched from medical insurance to MediShare, which is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this really going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. If you want to find out more, here's a number for you. 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Dr. Shavonda Jacobs-Young, administrator of the Agricultural Research Service. She works to solve agricultural problems related to areas such as nutrition, food safety, and food quality. Genesis 1:12 reminds us of God's gifts of food. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to guide Dr. Jacobs-Young as she works toward improving the country's food and agricultural production. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of champions for Christ at liberty.edu/starns.
The leftist mayor of Minneapolis is trying to extort the Trump campaign by demanding the Target Center pay more than $500,000 in bogus security charges, all for an upcoming Keep America Great rally. It's a tactic used by radicals to shut down conservative speakers on many university campuses. By comparison, President Obama held an event in the same venue in 2009, and security only cost $20,000. In other words, the city's Democrat mayor is charging a Republican president 26 times more than what a Democrat president was charged. Trump campaign manager Brad Parscale said it was an outrageous abuse of power and borderline extortion. Every freedom-loving patriot in Minneapolis ought to take the afternoon off in protest outside City Hall. Their mayor is nothing more than a two-bit mobster wannabe trying to shake down the president. For more on this story, check out ToddStearns.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Hey, Sandy Rios back with you. I want to come back dry because this is very personal, but it occurred to me I want to share this with you. You know, I sort of stumbled when I was leaving you in the last segment, and it made me laugh. And it made me remember something I want to say publicly because this is really a matter of Thanksgiving for me. Some of you are new listeners and you don't need to know this. I don't talk about my private life much because it's, you know, why would I? That's not important. But I did have a biking accident and lost my two front teeth a little more than 3 years ago. And I went 3 years without actual teeth. I had devices and various things and my speech was really impaired. And some of you probably noticed at times, and sometimes you didn't. As of Mother's Day this year, I finally got things sorted out. And so when I stumbled over myself in that last segment, I had to laugh because, ironically, God has been so good to give me, you know, good care, and I have, you know, teeth where I can actually speak at least close to the way I used to be able to speak. And I am so very grateful. So I just wanted to address that because many of you have listened for a long, long time, and I never did really land the plane on that. And I was reminded of how grateful I should be. So I am, and I wanted to tell you that. All right, well, lots of things are coming out of Washington. Oh, my goodness, I can hardly keep up. And so I think the best way to do this is to start with, I want to talk first about the Robert Mueller part of what's coming out. Okay, so we'll take it in pieces. And this was John Roberts last night on Fox who did a good report on it. Let's listen.
A senior administration official tells Fox News exclusively that the investigation into the genesis of the Russia probe is expected to be released later this month and that its findings will be detailed. The Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz has been looking into whether there were abuses of the FISA system to begin surveillance of Trump campaign officials that ultimately led to the Mueller investigation. Sources also say another investigation into the Russia probe, this one headed up by veteran prosecutor John Durham, has been expanded based on what Durham is finding. He has added staff and agents and has widened the timeline of the investigation past Election Day and into the spring of 2017 when Robert Mueller was appointed special counsel. No word on when Durham's investigation will be completed. Fox News has also learned that Mueller was not accurate when he told Congress on July 24th that he was not interviewing for the position of FBI director when he met President Trump in the Oval Office in May of 2017.
My understanding, I was not applying for the job. I was asked to give my input on what it would take to do the job.
Multiple administration officials tell Fox News that when Mueller met the president on May 16, 2017, he was indeed pursuing the post left open by the firing of James Comey a week earlier. In fact, Mueller was looking at two possible jobs, FBI director and special counsel. According to documents obtained by Judicial Watch in a Freedom of Information request, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein had talked with Mueller about the possibility of becoming special counsel before he met with President Trump. In an email dated May 12th, Rosenstein wrote to Mueller, quote, "The boss and his staff do not know about our discussions." The day after Mueller met with the president, Rosenstein appointed him as special counsel. The president's former outside attorney was outraged that Mueller interviewed for the FBI position knowing that he could become special counsel. John Dowd telling Fox News Mueller's actions were, quote, "the most dishonorable conduct I have ever witnessed."
All right, that's the first part of John's report. Now let's sit on this just for a second. A bottom line, Bob Mueller has been maintaining, and he actually testified before Congress, that when he met with President Trump on May the 16th, he was not applying. Oh, I was not applying. No, I was just talking about the position of FBI director. I wasn't really applying for the job. The truth is, he was there to apply. Comey had just been fired on May the 9th, and President Trump has maintained all this time that Mueller was there to lobby for the job and that he turned him down. Do you remember this? And so then the very next day, Rod Rosenstein announces that Mueller will be the special prosecutor. So Mueller, I'm going to give you the timeline here because it's very confusing. And actually, I had this story yesterday and started down the path to tell you this, but it was so complicated we ran out of time. This all comes to us, this information, a lot of what I'm going to share with you from the work of Judicial Watch, who has just been, honestly, the judicial watchman on the wall this entire proceeding. And all through Hillary Clinton's shenanigans in the 90s, that's when Judicial Watch first started, and that's when I got connected with them. And now they're very good friends, and they do very good work. So here's kind of, if I can condense it, I'm going to try. On May the 9th, James Comey was fired by President Trump, okay? So his reason, remember, for firing James Comey, his justification, apart from all the obvious things, was that the way Comey handled the Clinton email, and he cited a letter or a finding by Rod Rosenstein as the reason, the actual reason. And he mentioned Rod Rosenstein's name. Well, what we're understanding here is that Rosenstein was aghast. Oh, my goodness. These guys are all buddies. They all work in the same shop. They've known each other for years. Oh, my gosh. Now, I'm being blamed. I'm putting words. I'm doing a Adam Schiff here, but I'm putting words into Rosenstein's mouth. But my understanding is he was aghast by that and, of course, wanted to cover himself, you see, because that made him look bad to his buddies, Comey and Mueller. They're all this one big, happy, D.C.-centric team. And so Rosenstein began immediately to, without telling anyone, to hunt for a special counsel. In fact, on the 10th, This is the day after Comey was fired. He made his first overture, meaning Rosenstein, to Bob Mueller. On May the 12th, he wrote an email to Bob Mueller and said, "The boss and his staff do not know about our discussions." And that was in an email to Bob Mueller on May the 12th. Now, again, keep in mind, Comey fired on the 9th, first overture to Mueller on the 10th, and then the email, "The boss doesn't know about our discussions," on the 12th. And then on the 16th, it was a very busy day for Rod Rosenstein. He met with Bob Mueller. Oh, the president, sorry. He'd already met with Bob Mueller. On May the 16th, Bob Mueller met with the president and claims, no, he wasn't offering me the job, or he wasn't talking to me. I wasn't talking to him about the job of FBI director. We were talking about the job, but not for me personally. But now we know that's a lie. The President Trump was right all along that he was there to ask for the job that Comey had just been fired from, that Mueller had had before Comey. You can imagine now the panic because of what they were up to. And Mueller, even though he's not a young man, was eager to come back and sort of like they were buds. They were working on this together. We know that Comey and Mueller were very good friends in spite of what Mueller said in his hearing. To try to downplay their relationship. They were very close. They had a long history of working together, even outside of law enforcement. Okay, so he rushes in, it sounds like, and wanted to be hired. The president tells him no. And so on that same day, the 16th of May, when President Trump was meeting with Mueller, telling him no, he could not be FBI director, Rod Rosenstein met again with Mueller after that meeting. They had a little chat. And he writes this: "Sometimes the moment chooses us." That's the email that he wrote to Bob Mueller. "Sometimes the moment chooses us." That happened on the 16th. "Sometimes the moment chooses us." And of course, then Rod Rosenstein met with Andrew McCabe and other members of the FBI for some reason on that same day. So it was a busy day. Mueller meets with President Trump. He's turned down for the job, and then Mueller meets with Rosenstein. Rosenstein evidently taps him to be special counsel and then says to him this lofty notion that sometimes the moment chooses us. And then Rosenstein goes on to meet with Andrew McCabe and other members of the FBI team. And then without any warning to anyone, Rosenstein, out of the blue, announces on the 17th that he's appointing Bob Mueller to be special counsel. And you notice that the president's former attorney at the end of John Roberts' report said, John Dowd, said that he thought this was the most unethical thing he'd ever heard anyone do. That Bob Mueller should go in and act as though he wanted to be FBI director. He's turned down for the job. He must have wanted it. And then he decides to become special counsel. It's very, very untoward. And it just shows you that Bob Mueller does not have the character that everyone told us he had. Not me. I didn't tell you that, but every establishment figure in Washington, every senator, including Republicans, bragged and bragged about what a man of principle he is. On May 16th, Mr. Mueller visited Rosenstein after the president turned him down, and Rosenstein said in an email to Mark Philip, "I am with Mueller. He shares my view. Duty calls. Sometimes the moment chooses us." All right, so just to confirm to you how Bob Mueller handled this publicly before the when he was testifying before the House committee, this is his exact words in testimony, clip 15.
My understanding, I was not applying for the job. I was asked to give my input on what it would take to do the job, which triggered the interview you're talking about.
So you don't recall on May 16, 2017, that you interviewed with the president regarding the FBI director job?
I interviewed with the president, and was about the job and not about me applying for the job.
So your statement here today is that you didn't interview to apply for the FBI director job.
That's correct.
Yeah, but it wasn't correct. It wasn't true at all. And just to make it clear, I'll say one more time that they wanted, it looks as though Bob Mueller or whoever, Rod Rosenstein, wanted him to become the FBI director again so that he could cover up what they were doing. They were carrying out a coup against a sitting president. And so Mueller rushed in to try to, oh, if I can just get hired to be FBI director again, then we can tap this thing down. Those are my words again. I'm doing the Adam Schiff on Bob Mueller, except I think there's reason to believe that what I'm saying is true. And that's what John Durham is now investigating. That's what's incredible about this. One of the other incredible things, John is, it's the UK is the third country that he and Bob, the Attorney General, Bill Barr. I always say Bob Barr. I told you Bob Barr was a congressman from Georgia who was on the impeachment committee in the House during the Clinton years. And I interviewed him a million times. So I often make a mistake and say, yeah, I'm not going to repeat it. All right, it'll make me say it again. But it's Attorney General Bill Barr. And Durham travel to Italy, UK, and Australia. They're asking all these countries what they know and how what they know about their diplomats. Some of them were from these countries who seem to have set up members of the Trump campaign. And we also know, of course, all about what happened with Ukraine. I'll get to that in just a second. I started to tell you yesterday, and I was at the end of the show, but I'd like to try again. We now have evidence, email evidence, that shows, proves that the DNC colluded with Ukraine to help Hillary Clinton and to harm President Trump. We not only have email evidence, we have a tape, and we played part of it for you yesterday. It's in Turkish, so you can't exactly understand it. But they're talking about the very thing I'm saying to you. By the way, one of the guys on the call, Sintik, he's the director of the National Anti-Corruption Bureau of Ukraine. He was. He was tried and convicted in Ukraine for interfering in the U.S. presidential election in 2016. He's the one that released the black ledger on Paul Manafort during the 2016 presidential election that eventually led to, remember, Manafort being treated honestly like an animal. The early morning raid, having been put in solitary confinement. It's just horrible, honestly, how they treated him, given it was it seems as though he certainly was guilty of committing financial crimes, but he's not a mob boss, and that's how he was treated. So this particular phone interview or phone back and forth, they talk about, I'll just read it a little bit to you. This is a person called Kolya, and this is Sintnik, who I just described as getting the black ledger prepared. Kolya, did they, those Russians, help Trump, your people? Sintnik, I think they did. Yeah, I helped him too. Not him, but Hillary. I helped her. Kolik, yeah, right. Sintnik, Trump, his purely inner problem issue, they dominate over external matters. While Hillary, she is, how shall I put it? She belongs to the cohort of politicians who comprise the hegemony of the U.S., both in the U.S. and the entire world, right? For us, it's sort of better. In other words, Hillary and the hegemony is better. For Americans, what Trump is doing is better for them. And then it goes on. So we've got email and audio now. You can see how the wheels are coming off the bus. And that's why this interview on CNN with James Clapper was stunning to me. I want you to hear it one more time. This is James Clapper, former director of national intelligence with a CNN anchor. Let's listen. Clip six.
As you know, the president now has sitting members of this government. You have the attorney general traveling the world now, meeting with U.S. intelligence partners, trying to find out, in his view, whether they participated in some sort of Obama administration-led effort to undermine President Trump in the last election here. You also know that John Durham, who is a former prosecutor, senior Justice Department official, he's pursuing his own investigation on the origins of that probe. Are you concerned that Barr's or Durham's investigation will find wrongdoing and seek to punish former intelligence officials?
Well, I don't know. I don't think there was any wrongdoing. I think at the time all of us were trying to navigate a very, very difficult, politically fraught, highly charged situation. I know for my part, my main concern was the Russians and the threat posed by the Russians to our very political fabric. And the message I'm getting from all this is apparently what we were supposed to have done was to ignore the Russian interference, ignore the Russian meddling and the threat that it poses to us. And oh, by the way, blown off what the then commander-in-chief, the President Obama, told us to do, which was to assemble all the reporting that we could, that we had available to us, and put it in one report that the president could pass on.
That sounds very much like a confession to me. We'll come back and talk about it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
from whom the whole body, fitly joined together and compacted by that which every joint supplieth. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. It's not by chance that Jesus refers to his church as the body. Just as it is with our physical bodies, every member has a distinct role and function to fulfill. Unfortunately, in this era of celebrity Christianity, we've reduced the concept of ministry solely to what occurs and what is often little more than Sunday productions and performances. The key to thriving in God's kingdom is understanding that every member in the body of Christ is vital and is called to ministry.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each weekend for the weekend edition of Washington Watch for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others each day, 4 p.m. Central Time. Be there.
AFR's own J.J. Jasper is a morning on-air personality, author, comedian, Christian, and family man. J.J.'s also a keynote speaker at banquets, men's ministry events, pregnancy center fundraisers, and more.
This is Penny Weaver from Decatur, Illinois. Last year, we had the privilege of J.J. Jasper as our speaker. We had our largest fundraising banquet ever.
Information on J.J.'s availability to speak at your event is at jjjasper.com.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Regressives are incessantly clamoring to see Donald Trump's tax returns. What his attackers are ignoring in the process is a little thing called the Constitution. The Fourth Amendment guarantees the right of every American to be secure from government intrusion into his person, his house, and his papers. Well, the president is an American, as much of an American as you and I are, so this protection applies to him. And his tax returns are papers, so this protection applies to them too. The only exception is if authorities have not just speculations or allegations, but actual evidence a crime has been committed and the man's papers are central to the investigation. But no one has even alleged that the president has committed a crime. So this is just another snipe hunt. Regressives constantly yammer that Trump is not above the law. Well, neither are his enemies.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with a Secure Freedom Minute. News broke late yesterday that John Durham, the veteran U.S. attorney based in Connecticut who has been assigned to investigate the perpetrators of the Russian collusion hoax, is expanding his staff's focus and numbers. It is absolutely predictable that this news will further panic already skittish congressional Democrats. Expect them to respond by ramping up their party's well-honed ability, aided and abetted by the mainstream media, to deflect attention from Mr. Durham's inquiry by intensifying their kangaroo court-style Trump impeachment proceedings. Fortunately, the White House counsel has just forcefully challenged the legitimacy of Nancy Pelosi's impeachment gambit. Notably, she hasn't sought, let alone secured, a vote by the full House of Representatives to begin a formal impeachment inquiry into the president. As a result, he and the chamber's Republicans are seriously disadvantaged by an unfair and rigged process. This must not stand. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
On the impeachment front, White House counsel Pat Cipollone late today sent a letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the chairs of three House committees slamming the impeachment investigation, saying President Trump and his administration cannot participate in your partisan and unconstitutional inquiry. In the letter, Cipollone cites the lack of a vote in the full House to authorize an impeachment inquiry, writing, "The House of Representatives has never attempted to launch an impeachment inquiry against the president without a majority of the House taking political accountability for that decision." Cipollone also blasts Democrats for denying President Trump the due process a fully authorized inquiry would allow him, saying, "You have denied the president the right to cross-examine witnesses, to call witnesses, to receive transcripts of testimony, to have access to evidence, to have counsel present, and many other basic rights guaranteed to all Americans."
So, Brett, what the White House counsel is basically doing here is daring Nancy Pelosi to hold a vote in the full House and also daring her to escalate legal action against the lack of cooperation from the White House, because the White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, believes that precedent is very important here. And the other three times that a president has faced an impeachment proceedings, Johnson, Nixon and Clinton, those were both all three of those were preceded by votes in the full House. So they think they're on solid ground here.
Yes. As well, they might be. Although Andy McCarthy said earlier in the week when he was writing that he thought the courts, if they had an opinion, would certainly side on the idea that previous impeachment proceedings had always been preceded by a vote to authorize such a thing in the House. That the Constitution is very vague about how this should proceed. But based on precedent, he felt the courts would say that. However, Andy also cautioned that the courts don't like to weigh in on procedure, congressional procedures. And so there's no guarantee. But I do think it's interesting. I think that the facts, the information coming out is just overwhelming. It's still just overwhelming. The issue is, though, will people actually know what's happening? What are the facts here? And that's why it was so stunning, that clip I've played twice this morning with John Brennan on CNN, that the listeners to CNN heard that. They heard that question from the anchor, which was a very good question, and John Brennan's response to it. James Clapper. James Clapper's response to it about how they were doing what Barack Obama told them to do. They were just trying to follow orders, among other things that he said. That's pretty stunning. It really is. So my sense of this, it's just a sense. You know, how would I know? I just think things are shifting. I really do. I think things are shifting. This is amazing. When I see Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff talking, they don't look as confident as they often do. You know, with that big, the wide-eyed smirk, they don't have that. They look a little nervous, and I think they might have reason to be. Now, we're going to be told that polls are showing. In fact, I heard it yesterday or this morning. The polls show that people, you know, are in favor of the impeachment inquiry by, you know, large margins. I think I saw 59%, something like that. You know, I don't trust those polls unless I actually look at who's being asked the question and how the question is being asked. I mean, and it's possible that it's true, because if most people are listening to other sources of information, if you just listen to CNN all day, you would be one of those who said, yeah, go for it. You also could be just a person who says, well, let's pursue it. Let's find out. But not really have in your mind some sort of an axe to grind against the president, our preconceived notion that he's guilty. So we'll see. But I just think the actual evidence is pointing to President Trump's innocence, certainly on this collusion and on the other things, too, on the Ukraine call. By the way, let me tell you a few other things that came out in the last 24 hours. Now we have a document that shows that Ukraine, you remember in the conversation with President Trump and the Ukrainian president, the accusation is that President Trump was threatening the Ukrainian president that he would withhold aid. He was implying, says Schiff, that we would withhold American aid if they didn't investigate Burisma, this company that Hunter Biden was working with. That's not what was said in the phone call, but that's the inference by piecing a couple of parts of the call together. We know now, because of documents that have just been revealed, that Ukraine had already reopened their probe of Hunter Biden months before that Trump phone call. President Trump likely knew that. Certainly, we think that the intelligence so-called, I'll say leaker, the leaker that's called a whistleblower, probably knew that, but he left that out of his report. So there was no point. There wouldn't have been any, any point if the president had intended to threaten withholding of funds if they didn't investigate. There was no point. They were already open. They had already reopened the investigation. And you remember I told you that Viktor Shokin, who was a prosecutor who was looking into Burisma, who Biden says, Joe Biden says, he had fired, he was going to withhold money, U.S. dollars, from Ukraine. He bragged about it publicly. That was Shokin, who actually was fired. And Shokin gave a sworn testimony in a European court just recently that he was absolutely told he was fired because he refused to stop looking into Burisma and that he was just getting ready to interview Hunter Biden when not all came down. So the wheels are coming off the fact bus. That's a fact. Now, whether people will actually know about this, I don't know. A couple of other really interesting things you probably heard, but if you haven't, I need to tell you that we know now that Bill Clinton, going back in the archives of the Clinton Museum, we know that Bill Clinton is on record asking Tony Blair to help him resolve a dispute with British Airways between American Airlines and British Airways because he said it's a political season. I think I'll read exactly. In a political season, it would be big over here to get this open sore resolved. If you could have somebody take a look at that, that's what he says to Tony Blair. So he's doing exactly what they are claiming is outrageous for the president to do. And, of course, John Kerry weighed in about, I thought we had the clip, but I don't think we do. He harumphs about how horrible it was that Donald Trump tried to get help from the Ukrainian president. Let me make it clear, for his election in 2020, let me make it clear that that phone call does not show that at all. That's just what the claims are of Adam Schiff and the Democrats. So John Kerry's harumphing over that. But now we know, thanks to Tucker Carlson, that in 2004, John Kerry was, he was quoted in The Guardian as talking about meetings he's had with foreign leaders who can't go out and say it publicly, but boy, they look at you and they say, you've got to win this. You've got to beat this guy. We need a new policy. Things like that. And Kerry then refused to say which leaders made the comments, what his response was, or whether they pledged to help him. He basically said he wasn't going to be specific because it was his right to keep his conversations with foreign leaders confidential. That's absolutely necessary for leadership. That's what John Kerry said. Isn't that amazing? These guys really are such pompous. And I think people are just now beginning to sort of see, I hope, that this has really been a shell game for a very long time. And speaking of shell games, Mrs. Clinton is, never one to quit. President Trump tweeted this. He invited Hillary Clinton to run for president again in 2020, saying only one condition. The crooked one must explain all of her high crimes and misdemeanors, including how and why she deleted 33,000 email after getting C subpoena. Hillary Clinton responded in a brief tweet, "Don't tempt me. Do your job." So some people are saying that, and I've heard this before, that they think Hillary Clinton may be tempted to get back into the election. But the point that I want to make in this is just that Hillary Clinton is the biggest, as my husband would say, poser. It's the word he uses often. She can play a game in an unbelievable way. Maybe not quite as convincingly as others. I think Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi might be better than Hillary Clinton. But Hillary Clinton has been running a shell game, and that's really probably an innocent description of it. She's been running a very damning counterculture undermining of this country since she came on the scene. She was on the impeachment committee going after Nixon, and you may or may not know that she was fired from that committee. She was young. She just graduated from law school, but she stole information from the committee and did other things. And the Democratic chairman of the committee fired her because she was so corrupt, I guess was the word, even back then. So there's lots to say about her. There are several other stories. Of course, we're going to be following this. We will every single day. The thing with Mueller is so interesting. I think he may be in big trouble. I think Comey may be in big trouble. The FISA abuses is something, of course, that this prosecutor is looking into. And that's something that the FBI was up to their neck in. And that's a very serious breach of the public trust. So the FISA court was abused, we think, and it was a coup, participated in by James Comey. It seems to me like Robert Mueller was probably in the thick of this. Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Andrew McCabe. And I think the wheels are coming off the bus. And I think James Clapper is going to be part of that. John Brennan will be part of that. So stay tuned. We'll be covering it every day. I want to pause for just another little commercial. You know that our Share-a-thon is coming up next week, I think it is. And when we do Share-a-thon, we love to hear from you. I can't tell you how personally encouraging it is to hear those voicemail We play your voice during the Share-a-thon. We can't play all of them, but we pick out many of them and play them during the shows when we're talking, and it just gives us a sense of community. And it's also very encouraging because when you do radio, you know, you don't really see the people you're talking to. So it's really nice to hear back from them. So if you would like to call and say something about what AFR Talk means to you, what this show means to you, any other show means to you, call 877-876-8893. That's 877-876-8893. And they'll walk you through the prompts. It's real easy. So now I want to get to something else really important. Oh. You know, I think I'm going to tell you myself instead of playing Shannon Bream's report. Basically, the opening session of the October session for the Supreme Court started on Monday. And the case that they've been hearing right up front was a case on whether Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 makes it illegal for employers to discriminate because of a person's sexual orientation or transgender status. In the original code written in 1964, it says sex. So in other words, you can't, according to the writers of that law in 1964, discriminate on the basis of whether you're a male or a female. It had nothing to do with transgenderism or what you think you might be. But that's what the court is arguing right now. There are three different cases, three different like examples in this, and one of them is a guy transitioning to a woman who's working in a funeral home in Michigan, and this funeral home fired him because he was not dressed properly. He greets the public. I don't know the particulars of what he wore and but they said this can't be. He's our front person. He greets the families, and so they did fire him. So he's part of this suit. And what's happening is the justices are split. The conservative justices, of course, are talking about the original. Let me just read. This is what Neil Gorsuch said. He talks about the massive social upheaval that would be entailed in the decision that said that basis on sex would be interpreted to mean sexual orientation or transgenderism, that it would cause social upheaval if they changed that. And, of course, they make the point that that's not at all what the original intent of that law was. So I don't know what's going to happen with that. I think we're going to find out a lot about the justices we won't know till next June. And as an aside on that same issue, I thought this story was stunning. I did not know, maybe you did, that Shirlene McRae, who is Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, presidential candidate, former, was a lesbian. She came to New York City in 1977. She said, "When I came, I identified as a lesbian, so I know intimately the struggles that young people have. I was not rejected by my family like so many of these young people are, but it's really difficult." She wrote a piece in 1979 for Essence magazine called "I Am a Lesbian." Now, here's the point I want to make. She is not a lesbian now. She's married and has children. We talk about ex-gays all the time. I talk about it when I mention it in public or get into conversations. People cannot believe there are such people, but I know lots of them. I had no idea that the mayor of New York's wife was one of them. And by the way, I have to get to this. Facebook has made an incredible decision. You remember that President Trump issued a campaign ad to be on social media and CNN that talked about what actually happened with Ukraine and Biden and Hunter Biden. CNN refused to run it. They were furious. But Facebook is running the ad. In fact, one of the executives of Facebook, Nick Clegg, said, "We don't believe that it's appropriate for us to referee political debates and prevent a politician's speech from reaching its audience and being subject to public debate and scrutiny." Ladies and gentlemen, that is stunning. And that is a reversal of Facebook policy. And I just wanted to tell you that. And it doesn't mean it's going to be forever and ever, but for today, we can be grateful. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.